Hello from Delinea, and welcome to the show. If you've been enjoying the 401 Access Denied podcast, then make sure to like, follow, and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. We'd love to hear from you. Join the discussion by leaving us a comment or a review on your platform of choice, or by emailing us at podcast@delinea.com. From all of us at Delinea, thank you and enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the 401 Access Denied podcast. I am the host of the podcast, Joe Carson, Chief Security Scientist and Advisory CISO at Delinea, and I'm really pleased to be here. I'm joining you from Tallinn, Estonia, where you know I'm back in my lab, enjoying the research, and I'm actually joined with one of my favorite people in the industry, because this person has been on the show several times before, and I'm welcoming him back. So, Carlos, welcome back to the podcast. Can you give the audience a little bit of background, who you are, what you do, and some fun things about yourself?
Sure. Well, thank you for inviting me again. It's always great to have a chat with you. I always have a fun time in this podcast. So my name is Carlos. I'm currently working as principal team lead in Halborn, dedicated to pen testing of any kind of off-chain assets. And this is because Halborn is a company dedicated to Web3 companies. So we'll do pen testing of browser extensions, Android iOS applications, webs, cloud environments, infrastructure, anything that can be pen tested at the end. I'm also the main writer in Hacktricks, and I have created several tools such as the Beast Suite, which is some nice and funny scripts to try to find privilege escalation vulnerabilities in different operating systems. And yeah, I'm also more in the past, I used to be very active in CTFs and so on. But yeah, I still try to play whenever I have the chance.
Likewise, that's the challenge I have right now is my CCF time is like almost to zero at the moment. Yeah. So I'm hoping to get the time to get back into it. And I mean, the main topic today is going to be getting into, you know, your journey with Hacktricks, because for me, it's one of the most valuable resources. If you're in security, it's a resource that you always have available and go to quite frequently, especially when you're trying to understand certain vulnerabilities or certain exploitation techniques. And really tend to look at it from a harder perspective. But before we get into Hacktricks, I'd like to take you back in a bit of your previous experience. On you did your first talk at DEF CON last year, which is kind of, you know, one of the things that we all have in our to-do list that we all want. Certain conferences we want to talk about. So before we get into going into the, you know, the journey with Hacktricks, how was the DEF CON talk? How did it go? And what was the feedback?
It was a really nice experience. I have to say that we fooled the room, so that was great.
Absolutely. I mean, I was in the audience and that room was packed. It was a big room as well. It was one of the main halls, so it was fantastic.
Yeah. It was in the main track, or in one of the main tracks of DEF CON, and it was fun because one of the organizers come to us and say, "Hey guys, like you fill the room," and we were like, "Of course, man. What were you expecting?"
That's always the case, because you have such a reputation. Also, you've got, you know, when you're going to do a live demo, you get people's attention, and that's definitely one of the things that he was like, "Okay, this is going to be live. I'm going to come and see how this goes."
Yeah, and we had a lot of scary live demos. I can tell you that.
And that was one of the things we were talking before, you know, before we kicked off, was that when you're doing those live demos, is you try it so many times and you go back and forward and you're resetting it right again. You're like, "Okay, now I'm in a different place. I'm on a different network. Maybe I'll try it again just to make sure it works." And you're, how many times did you retry that demo before you did it live?
Oh man, several times. I just the day before, potentially three times each demo, and I have every command just for copy pasting it to make sure I wouldn't have any mistake. Because I have had mistakes in the past in some other live conferences, and the booking in front of hundreds of people is not a nice experience.
It's not a nice experience, but one of the things I mentioned is that sometimes when you're doing that, and it does happen, it shows the audience the thought process, what you're thinking about, you're going. And I think sometimes even the audience, they appreciate it. Even when it does go wrong, they'll be like, you know, this person's really taking a risk. They're doing it live, and you get the respect for that. And if it does go wrong, then it really opens up. People start thinking about, this is the thought process that, you know, the speaker's having. They're going through this kind of debugging track. And it really also adds value to the audience as well, because it also gives them that extra experience and knowledge to see something in life.
Yeah, that's also very true. That's also very true. But you don't want to be in that position.
You don't want to, for the speaker, it's difficult. But for the audience, there's value. That's the thing is, I guess I'm a perfectionist. When I'm up on stage, I think things for me have to go perfect. As I mentioned earlier, I've had talks when the battery has went flat, or I've had toasters take out electricity. And you just have, you know, whatever you deal with, you just have to continue to get the audience what they're there for. So I definitely applaud you for, you know, I was in the audience and I thought it was actually for me. I went to quite a few talks during DEF CON and it was one of my favorite. So it's definitely, it was, you both, it was your peer who was doing the background research with, I can't remember his name.
It was, I presented with Diego.
Yeah, that's correct. And it was fantastic. You actually did a really good, when you're presenting with two people, you did a really good kind of back and forward between. So it was really well done.
Yeah, so just for the audience, if anyone is interested in hearing it, it is in YouTube already. So you
absolutely
can search. Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it is called Exploring Linux Memory Manipulation for the Steals and Evasion. And the names are, well, this is from DEF CON 31, and the presenters are Carlos and Diego. And yeah, it's about how we can abuse mainly proxy of men in Linux in order to load other binaries in memory and bypass several defenses related to traditional Linux defenses and also new distroless defenses. I think it was pretty interesting.
It was fantastic. So I will make sure it's in the show notes that will for the audience. We'll put in the links to back so it'll be easier for them to be able to find it as well. So let's get into the main theme is that, you know, where did HackTricks all start? What was the starting point? What was the, you know, because I think, you know, I take a lot of notes and my notes are just sometimes just horrible. They're all over the place. I'm trying to organize it and trying to make it better. But for you, where did the journey start? When did HackTricks become the idea?
Yeah, man. So it started when I was studying the OSCB. So it was around 2019. Mm-hmm. And it was because I felt a little bit overwhelmed with the OSCB because you had like a lot of information, a lot of methodologies, a lot of network services, web vulnerabilities, tools to use and everything. And I just wanted to have my own notes. And from the past, I already experienced that if I store my notes offline, at some point, I was going to crash the computer, reinstall the operating system, I will lose everything. So it happened already that like two or three times to me. And I was like, okay, I want to have my notes and I'm going to put them online because this way I'm not going to lose them.
It definitely makes it safer. I mean, I run into the same challenge as that. Because I use so many devices, I've got devices for CTFs for the notes, I want to have them available. And then I've got my content creation machines, I've got hacking machines, reverse engineering ones. So I'm sitting here a lot, and I'm just surrounded by so many devices. And if I try to store it offline in each device, and you try to sync it up afterwards, and you try to move it and merge it, things get overwritten. It gets very messy. So absolutely, going to an online version does simplify things a lot, especially multi-platform as well, because I'm always switching it between Mac, Linux, and Windows. So it does make it a little bit easier when you do have this at least an online version which supports multiple platforms.
Yeah, exactly. And it was fun because I think that, so HackTricks is living in this platform, which is called Gitbook. And I think that Gitbook, as a company, just started a couple of months before. So I just discovered it and it was one of the first guys just getting his mm-hmm. notes and putting it in this platform. Because now I have seen there are a lot of books similar mm-hmm. to HackTricks, usually smaller. It's complicated for a book to be bigger. and a lot of people using Gitbook, but I think HackTricks was one of the first ones. Another funny story about HackTricks was that I was never expecting people to find about it. It was just mm-hmm. your personal notes. As a cybersecurity professional, it was my personal notes. And I just bought this domain HackTricks XYZ because I liked the HackTricks domain, the idea HackTricks. It makes sense. And also XYZ because it was the cheapest one. I didn't even know that Google was indexing pages from XYZ because it's like a very malware related domain.
Yes.
So I was never expecting people to find about it. But I was glad a couple of years later that people was telling me, hey, did you know about this book? It's great. It's sharing a lot of tricks. And it was like, How did you find that? That's mine.
Because yeah, I guess your intention was that it was for your personal kind of just easy access for you, you know, to quickly go to something to, you know, either understand about certain parameters or command lines or capabilities and, you know, do that quick copy paste and you know, replace the attributes.
Exactly.
Because that's what I mean. It's a lot of times, and that's what I use is more my notes is quick copy paste in between different virtual machines and environments. But you know, when people start finding it, it becomes for me, especially when I was going through doing certifications or doing certain training courses, and there's a specific area that I wasn't very familiar with. It was so valuable. It was so well organized. That was one of the things that I find it very valuable is the organization. How would you come up with your method for organizing things? Because I think that's the challenge we all have, is that, you know, if I'm doing Kerberos thing, or I'm doing, you know, CrackMap Exec, or I'm doing Linux versus Windows, and cloud even, how did you decide to organize it in such a way?
Yeah, well, first of all, it started with a same feeling, because, you know, those were my personal notes. So everything was completely disorganized, just copy-paste stuff, just my own notes. Maybe one third of the book was in Spanish also, because they were my notes. And then people started discovering it was like, no, I need to change this. And regarding organization, I don't know, man. I think I just try to keep it as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. So just to create these different sections, and then I will have like one section of Linux. And it was a lot into privilege escalation in Linux, so I just was creating subsections. To be honest, I think that when I saw a page growing a lot, I will just start dividing this page in other subpages and so on. Also, regarding organization, I think that Cloud Hacktricks is much better organized because I started that one from scratch. While Hacktricks, you can go to the index and find like hundreds of different sections, and it makes a little bit complicated to follow it. But I also think it's the essence of Hacktricks that you just join and you see all this stuff and you see like, oh man, there is a lot of information here. And that's what I don't want to change the current organization of Hacktricks. But also in order to improve this, I create like the methodology sections. Mm-hmm. So you will have like the pen testing methodology, the web methodology and so on, mm-hmm. in order to try to ease the use of Hacktricks. But yeah, I think at some point I should even create a methodology on how to use Hacktricks and how to find stuff. Because sometimes it's even complicated for me to find the stuff I'm looking for.
Yeah, having some of the, you know, the preface where it's basically, you know, explaining here's how you can use it. So, but I found at least the evolution of it over the years has definitely made it much easier to see, to your point, where you can see the index and you can see the methodologies and kind of map it in. Because when I was going through quite a few CTFs, because my area is mostly in privilege escalation, but when I get into the web, that's not one of my greatest areas, and it means that I really have to test my knowledge in certain areas. And I, you know, I find it really actually to the point where it was so educational. It was actually better than most training courses I've ever been through that was able to explain things and show the relationship and show basically also how it becomes exploitable. And so I find just that side of the knowledge side, it was not just about here's a command and you run it and it does this. It was always the background into, you know, how it's used, what's the method of using it, if you need to make changes as well. It was such a great educational content. I think that's the difference, and that's where Hacktricks really excels.
I appreciate that, because at the end, whenever I write in Hacktricks, my mentality is that at some point I'm going to forget what I'm writing about. So I want to explain as easy as possible, but also as much information as possible, all the concepts inside of Hacktricks. Also, something that I find interesting about Hacktricks is that by time to time, you're going to be reading a lot of different write-ups on the internet saying, hey, you have this technique to do this Postgres SQL injection, mm-hmm. and then a couple of months later, a new technique about the same topic but exploiting a different feature is going to appear. Mm-hmm. And it was also seen in my own personal notes, even in Hacktricks, that I would have a link there, another link there, another link. And it was like, it's impossible to just read all the links about some special subject. So the goal of Hacktricks is also to condense a lot of different research putting, of course, in the reference the original links, and just try to explain, hey, you can do this, 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 and this, and you don't need to go to 10 different links. You can just see everything explained and how is every technique related with the other one in Hacktrix, which makes a lot easier to learn about new stuff.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the things I found is, you know, to your point, is keeping it simple and making it something that is readable. You know, a lot of times you get into sometimes too technical, you know, it's all just about what the tool is doing versus what is the methodology. And I think that's sometimes the difference is that the methodology is the foundation. The tool is just automating it in such a way, you know, to achieve an outcome. And that methodology is maintained, which is great. So one of the things you mentioned that, you know, you've got Hacktrix and then you've got the cloud Hacktrix. What is the cloud where you're focusing on at the moment? Because I know you also added one of the previous episodes we went into was talking about Purple Panda, which was fantastic as well. It's all about you know, the escalation and discovery of cloud vulnerabilities and exploits. So what's expanding in the cloud side? Are you looking at more platforms or more capabilities, and where's next?
So I needed to separate Cloud Hacktrix from the regular Hacktrix because the regular one was just getting so big that it was getting impossible to find stuff. So I just started Cloud Hacktrix and remove or move everything related to cloud and SaaS provider, so software as a service provider, to Cloud Hacktrix. So actually the main goal of Cloud Hacktrix is to find, to understand and be able to know how SaaS and cloud platforms can be attacked. Focusing on CI/CD platforms, we are talking about GitHub Actions. To be honest, I will need to access it in order to remember them, because
I have the same as just my that's why we take notes, is our memories.
Exactly.
My age is like, I have to go and look at my notes. So.
So I have a lot of information about GitHub, Gitia, Concur, CircleCI, TravelCI, Jenkins, Apache, Overflow, Terraform, Cloudflare, Okta. So yeah, the goal is, you know, that I'm trying to call this like Red Team 2.0.
Okay.
Of course, it's a common red team, but it's more and more common to find companies that doesn't have any Active Directory, doesn't have any internal network, and everything is being used in SaaS providers. So they are going to use in Okta as a identity provider. They are going to be using some cloud, AWS, GCP, Azure. They are going to be using GitHub Actions or some on cloud CI/CD pipelines. And you no longer are going to be attacking an internal network. You are just going to be finding some tokens. And from those tokens, you need to be pivoting between platforms. And as a red teamer, I sometimes feel overwhelmed when I feel like, okay, I have these APA tokens. What can I do with it? What is the platform meant to do? How can I access the API? So the goal of Cloud Hacktrix is to just explain the most common SaaS providers and tell you, hey, these are attack vectors. This is how you can use the API. This is how the CI/CD pipeline works. This is how you could abuse the CI/CD pipelines and even steal other secrets or just abuse trust relationships to pivot between different cloud platforms. We are not longer talking about pivoting inside an internal network because there is no internal network.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things I've seen last year. A lot of the big trends was, and you know, going to lots of conferences and events, the big trend was that the switch to targeting cloud infrastructures and cloud environments, and also APIs. APIs was the initial access vector. And then basically what happens is that once they get into one of those cloud environments, it's almost like fully trusted between all of the resources and all of the integrations to the point where you've got that full trust. And you can simply just move around the network freely. Once you have those API tokens, once you've been able to exploit them, it's completely trusted. And it seems to be that, you know, it's in order to make sure that things work. And people are afraid to start hardening because then they start, you know, breaking things, just like you did on-premise traditional systems. And I think one of the areas is that really we need to have more knowledge into hard and properly hard. Where's the vulnerabilities? What's the best practices? I think, you know, and this is, you might get certain skilled resources who focus on different cloud providers, but really getting that holistic architecture knowledge across all of them is quite difficult these days. So I think, you know, what you're doing is building that foundation of how does it all work together and what's all of the vulnerabilities and exploits that can kind of lead and allow attackers to move on. And I think this is going to be definitely so valuable for at least defenders and those who's hardening these environments to really kind of find out what's the most targeted vulnerabilities and how they make sure that they reduce the risk as much as they can.
Exactly. And also in Cloud Actuaries, there is another section about cloud providers. So we are talking about AWS, GCP, Workspace from Google, Azure ID, or Entra ID.
Entra ID these days.
And even for others such as DigitalOcean. But well, the goal of this section of Cloud Actuaries is to explain. So what I have seen is that a lot of companies are trying to move to cloud without any kind of previous experience in cloud. So they are just going to be doing nasty stuff when moving to cloud. Like, hey, just spawn EC2 instances. Let's give administrator access to a lot of users because I don't understand IAM permissions in AWS. So just give everything, we will fix this. Let's run production and development in the same AWS account. And all these bad practices, that's because people think that cloud is very easy, and it actually is, but it's very easy to use it poorly. Yes. In order to use it in a secure way, you need to know what you are doing. So the goal of this section of Cloud Actuaries is to explain tens of different services on these platforms, explain how they can be used, how they can be securely configured, and also how they can be abused for privilege escalation, post-exploitation, persistence. So the goal of Cloud Actuaries in this matter is no longer just focus only on offensive security, but also on how a service can be used and then how a service can misuse.
So it's getting to the purple side of things, really. It's becoming a purple resource that allows you to really can look at it from an attacker perspective. So you actually look at your environment, how an attacker sees it, but also give you the recommendations into how you actually get, from the defensive capability. And that's kind of really it's no longer, you can't do one without the other. It's ultimately is you have to know what the exploits are and what the risks are, and then you have to know what you need to do in order to remediate and to close and harden the systems.
Exactly. Also because most of the pen testers that go to Cloud Actuaries actually doesn't have much prior experience with the cloud. So they also need to understand the foundations in order to understand the attacks. So in this case, it's meant for both system administrator blue teams and also red teams and pen testers, just to understand how everything is working in order to understand the vulnerabilities. And actually, I like a lot the organization because in Cloud Actuaries, you will go to the AWS and you will find the basics, the services, how every service works, how you can enumerate it, and then you will go to the sections about post-exploitation, privilege escalation, persistence. So I find it to be much better organized.
Absolutely. So what I want to switch into is some of the thing that you recently added into was you started doing training. So which is you started with the ART training. So what was the idea behind that? How has it been going, and what's next when it comes to the training side?
So the idea behind the ART certification, which is AWS Red Team Expert, was that, that in cybersecurity, there are a lot of companies dedicated to create trainings, but there weren't that many focused on offensive security in cloud environments. And what saw is that most of the companies or all the companies giving trainings in this subject, especially digital training, so no going to a conference and having a training, just buying maybe some training online. It was, they will give you some laboratories, some prepared environments, and then you will need to find the proper tools to complete the laboratories. And this is definitely a way for learning, but it's not my favorite way. Because you're going to be learning what you find on the internet, you're going to be focusing on the specific problem you have, but you are not going to be learning all the basics, all the foundations. You're not going to be learning about other services, but the ones that you have in those specific laboratories. And I found it to be a little bit lacking, especially in AWS and GCP, because there is much more training about Azure. That's why we start focusing on AWS.
Perfect.
So the goal of the course that we created is that We are going to be starting from the beginning. Suppose that you know nothing about AWS, mm-hmm. so we are going to explain what is an account, what is an organization, how is the hierarchy of AWS. Then we are going to be explaining with a lot of videos, with a lot of demos, a lot of different services. So you just don't focus in two or three services. We have like 20 or more than 20 AWS services. And for each service that you explain, you are going to be having some small laboratories. So we explain a lot of techniques. I do a lot of demos in the videos. And then you have your custom AWS accounts with your laboratories, and you're going to be able to do specific actions that you are going to be receiving help, because you're going to say, hey, you have these permissions, check this hackers page, but you're not going to be having the solutions. So if you want to find the flag, you need to learn what is going on. You cannot just copy paste, which is kind of a nightmare for some people. But at the end, everyone is grateful, because it's the only way you are going to learn without giving you the straightforward solutions. And then at the end of the course, you will have like methodologies for red teams, for white box assessments. So you will learn AWS, and they will learn how to do proper engagements in AWS. So we wanted to create this kind of full course where you go from zero to hero, and you're mm-hmm. actually able to perform a pen test and red teams in AWS in this case, because this is a course for AWS. But we are kind of close to release the course for GCP and Workspace also.
Oh, fantastic. So it's a really exploratory type of learning method, rather than just here's the thing, go through it A to Z, and you've done it. You actually have to explore it, which I think is one of the best ways, because it really forces you to go and understand the background about how things actually work properly. And sometimes you have to do a lot of research yourself as well. And even, going through the process of following you step by step. So is the course online or in person, or is it, and how long is the course itself? How long is the training?
So the course is online. You can find it in training.hackrich.xyz. Mm-hmm. It's a self-paced course. So you have just the videos, you have your own laboratory, and you just do it whenever you have the time. And it will have more than 50 laboratories, more than 20 hours of videos. Mm-hmm. So to be honest, the time it takes depends a lot of the people and on the background that they have. But we offer 45 days of laboratories that we are going to increase to 60 days in a couple of weeks once we manage to optimize the laboratories. So yeah, mm-hmm. I would say that it should take maybe a month and a half to finish it. And you're going to be having a final exam just to prove that you have the knowledge. And the final exam will have three different flags. If you find all of them, you will immediately get your certificate, and you will have the certification of the course, of the certification.
Fantastic. It sounds like the whole journey from you taking the path that you went and taking your notes and documentation and creating Hectrix and moving it to cloud. It's the evolution of, how you would have seen, to be trained.
Yeah, exactly.
Passing that on and actually creating something, because it's always a gap in the industry. What's found is that getting into, is the knowledge transfer, and also getting into where you wanted immersive training as well, where it's really interactive style of training, rather than just, taking it from, the old traditional, old school, industry kind of focused methods. I think that's what I find as well, is that the knowledge transfer is getting much more seamless and much more available for people to get in the industry. So really, what you've done is you've created the foundation of the next generation of people who would come to replace us. Which is ultimately, sometimes it's that we have to pass on the flag at some point.
At the end, I'm proud of Hacktrees because of that. I know a lot of people just learning in the past years. All of them know Hacktrees. All of them are very grateful for mm-hmm. having this organization. Of course, I need to mention that Hacktrees is not built on my pure knowledge. It's built on what I'm learning about reading new write-ups of new research of other people. And now I have a kind of a community. I know a lot of people that is sending everything they research, every new trick they find that is not yet in Hacktrees, they will send a pull request to GitHub and just collaborate. And it is helping a lot to people from all around the world to learn about cybersecurity. Also, something fun about Hacktrees is that it is now translated into 17 different languages, and every pull request, every chance that is performing Hacktrees is being translated to these languages, because at the end the goal is to just get cybersecurity closer to everyone in the world and allow people to learn on their own about cybersecurity.
Absolutely. That's one of the things, the challenge we've always had in the past, is to a point, is that it's always been isolated into, you know, main languages, and translations always was difficult to get it to a lot of those countries where they need it, in order, you know, where they may not have the skills or the knowledge or the training courses available, and having it translated just gives them that additional acceleration that they may have not had in the past. So what's next? What's next for you? What conference do you want to speak at next? What's the next coin you want to achieve, or what's next for Hacktrees?
So that's a good question. For Hacktrees training, we are looking forward to release the Workspace and DCP course before summer, and maybe after summer, if we have the time, we'll release course for Azure, just to have the three main goals as training. For Hacktrees at its own, to be honest, I think it just have enough movement. So I have a lot of people sending pull requests. I still see it like my personal notes, so it's not like I will dedicate my full-time job to Hacktrees. I will just write whatever I'm learning new and pulling Hacktrees and try to help people. So yeah, all I want to Hacktrees is just to continue as a community project for everyone. Actually, I'm kind of training my brother for giving him the access and the maintenance of Hacktrees, because I'm getting too busy, man. I'm kind of doing that. And regarding conferences, I will be talking in a conference in Malaga in Spain in May. I will be training the Team Europe for the next ICC, what is going to be celebrated in Chile. I think it will be at the end of October. So that's going to be pretty fun. Also, I sent a couple of call for paper and call for training to DEF CON this year. This year, I'm completely changing topics. I'm going to be talking about macOS in the call for paper, in case they select my talk, and also will be giving a training about AWS and GCP in DEF CON, in case they select my training, because I don't know nothing about that yet. But to be honest, I'm kind of stepping down a little bit in talks and conferences, and I would like to relax for maybe 1 or 2 years, maybe 2025, 2026, because at some point I realized that I was doing some researching just to have something for the next year to give a talk, just because people was expecting me to be giving talks in some Spanish conferences. And I realized that I'm not longer enjoying that much, because I'm feeling the pressure to give a talk. So I'm not enjoying it and then giving a talk. So I probably will be stepping down for conferences and so on for the next 2 years, just to relax a little bit and learn about
it. Absolutely. I mean, there's a tough balance as well. I'm always challenged with the same, is that how much time I'm spending and doing the research and playing in the lab, and then, you know, and then trying to reuse content, because a lot of times the conferences want exclusive talks, and I don't think that's something that's scalable and something that researchers want to be in a situation. So you want to be able to you know, repeat it and get it to as much audience as possible. But yeah, I hear you. It is a fine balance. My preference is always to research the things I enjoy doing, and then if it makes a good talk, I then try to convert it into the talk. Then I submit the CFPs for it. And then you hope that it's the interest that conferences want to hear, but sometimes it's hit and miss.
So exactly. I completely agree. Also, I love doing trainings, because you can have just your content, people will change, and you can reduce the content for training and people will get benefits. But regarding the taxes, what you say, you need to have novel topics, novel research, novel vulnerabilities, CVEs, and this stuff. And this year, I just felt like, hey, I'm no longer doing this for fun. I'm just doing it to have something to do so in a conference, mm-hmm. and I just want to step down from that path. I don't enjoy that. So yeah, you completely understand this.
I do. It's always, you know, it's sometimes just that balance. It's for me, it's finding that things that I enjoy talking about is what I kind of try to emphasize. And if you're not, you know, if it's something that you're doing the research just because it's a topic that the conference wants, it's the reverse way of doing it. So it's But Carlos, it's always awesome talking to you. I always enjoy catching up, chatting, and hopefully we'll get to catch up in somewhere near soon. If I make my way to Spain, we can probably catch up and have a drink. But otherwise, you know, definitely, if there's things that I can do for you, always feel free to reach out. So for the audience, what's the best way for the audience to stay in contact with you and to reach out?
So I think the main way will be via LinkedIn. So if you search for me, Carlos Polo, in LinkedIn, you can just easily find me. And if you have any questions about HackTricks or this stuff, conferences or whatever, or maybe HackTricks training, just ping me there and I will respond. Don't do it anymore in Twitter, because I am kind of moving Twitter to another person. So to contact me, it's better to use LinkedIn.
Fantastic. So, and we'll definitely make sure that all of the links to HackTricks and the training courses and all the content are made in the show notes, so the audience will be much easier to find those.
I appreciate it.
As always, it's fantastic. Any final words of wisdom that you'd like to leave the audience? Any tips or tricks or suggestions?
I don't know, man. Just as always, if you are technical in cybersecurity, just enjoy it. At some point, you lose that path, especially where you are working as a pen tester. Mm-hmm. At some point, you'll think more about the money than about technical. At that time, I guess you just need to step back, see what you really like, and just continue with your movement, because you can get your hobby being your work, or your work being your hobby. It's on you.
Absolutely. That's always the challenge. And I think we both come from that same background, is that for me, you know, it's technology and being a geek is my passion hobby. And it's always the final end about, okay, how do I keep it? How do I keep it that way?
Exactly.
Like, other priorities don't kind of overshadow it. And I think that's wise words to the audience, is that always follow what do what you enjoy doing, and try to spend as much time. There's always going to be things you have to do. The reporting, the documentation, you know, taking notes, and testing things. But, you know, try to kind of make sure that you're getting the fine balance between stuff that you really enjoy and really, you know, drives the passion. So, Carlos, as always, fantastic. Many thanks for being on. Hopefully catch up with you again soon. For the audience, tune in every 2 weeks for the 401 Access Denied podcast. We're really here to bring you, you know, the world leaders in, you know, cybersecurity that really are changing the future and really establishing the next generation of security professionals. So, Carlos, as always, keep up the amazing work, and enjoy what you're doing, and keep the passion.
Thank you. Thank you again for the invitation. It was great, as always.
Okay. Everyone, all the best. Take care and stay safe.
This podcast is brought to you by Delinea, the number one privileged access management solution for enterprises with complex hybrid IT environments. You can get our free ebook, Privileged Access Management for Dummies, by visiting us at delinea.com/PAM for Dummies. That's delinea.com/PAM4Dummies. From all of us at Delinea, thanks for listening.